Legal Docket with Dylan Honkoop on KGMI 790 and KGMI.com.
Well, this half hour with us, local DUI attorney Jonathan Rands in studio here on the Legal Docket. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Good to see you again after missing last week.
Yeah, but that's all right. We got you back in studio. And back in school are the kids. Are you happy about that?
It's nice.
It's nice. He's fessing up. Here live on the air this morning.
You beg for a summer break in May, and then you beg for back to school in mid-August. So it's,
parents never beg for that summer break, though. I'm not a parent yet, so I can't weigh in on this. Being back to school time, it's a good time to talk about kids and DUI.
Whoa. Is it?
Wow.
Is it ever a good time to talk about kids?
It's better to talk about it ahead of time probably than deal with it.
I would agree, yes.
Because if children are involved in a DUI situation, it's that much more tricky, right? If I recall, it seems like we've talked about this a long time ago.
Yeah.
But let's do a back-to-school focus here.
back-to-school
special. On the Legal Docket, yeah.
Let's be clear what we're talking about. We're not talking about children drinking and driving.
That's a whole different ballgame. No. Your 8-year-old, you know, no.
What I wanted to discuss and educate on and just sort of given this time of year with kids and given what I do, I think it's appropriate to discuss. I mean, a lot of people don't know that there's enhancements there and probably should be when a person is stopped and arrested for DUI.
Enhancements meaning the crime is considered worse.
The crime is the same. It's still a DUI.
Okay.
The mandatory minimum punishment insofar as jail stays the same. But collateral consequences are significant. For instance, let's just talk about a first one, a first arrest. Let's even call it an 09. You're at a family function. You've had a couple glasses of wine, but ultimately stopped and arrested and give a breath sample of an 089, 090. So what happens is this.
Just slightly over the legal limit.
Just barely over the legal limit. Potentially a blood test would potentially even exonerate you for being under the legal limit because breath testing is an approximation and there's some variabilities there. So a situation that really could happen to absolutely anybody that consumes alcohol anyways. Mm-hmm. So the mandatory minimums, if there's a conviction for DUI, don't change whatsoever as far as the jail time. It's still mandatory 24 hours. It's still a mandatory minimum fine of $941, but this is where it gets murky simply because there's an enhancement upon a conviction for and is finding that there's a child of 16 or a passenger under the age of 16. So 16 is the threshold, if you will, for being able to make the free choice to get in the vehicle with mom or dad. But before we ever get to sentencing, let's back up because there's a whole bunch of things that happen on the side of the road. Once a person's arrested, it's mandatory disclosure from the police agency to notify, and there's a box for this on the citation, to notify the court and the prosecutor and CPS of a child being in the car and an arrest occurred. So what happens right now is the car gets impounded. The driver spends mandatory time in jail due to booking. So what happens with the child?
Yeah.
A little discretion here in terms of what the police officer can do. A police officer can work with the arrested person and have somebody come pick up the child.
The spouse.
Family member. Really, it's anybody that the officer feels would be a good candidate for taking care of the child that's okay with the parent. Okay.
How does the officer know, though?
Well, hey, you know, is there anybody that can come pick up your kid? Yeah, my best friend, Joe. Okay, well, Joe shows up. Officer looks at him, you know, do you know him? If the child can speak, you know, if it's of age of speaking age and things of that nature, do you know Joe? Are you okay going with Joe? That kind of stuff would typically be the way that they figure it out. But they don't have to. They can certainly call CPS right then and there and have the child come be picked up by CPS. That takes a little longer. And so from a police perspective and resource perspective, my experience is when I've dealt with these situations is the police don't really want to have more agencies involved than necessary because CPS is going to be involved anyway. If they don't come and pick up the child and take custody of the child, it's mandatory that they do a well check of the child within 72 hours. Now, what's happened in the past when I've dealt with these situations is it's been in the school year and a person is arrested and they're booked into jail. the child goes with the other spouse or somewhere else mm-hmm. and ultimately gets up and goes to school the next day. Well, mom or dad is still in custody because they haven't been released yet. Either they haven't made bail or they haven't come down below an 04, or for whatever reason, they're just going to wait and see a judge at 1:30 in custody. CPS has been known to show up at the school mm-hmm. and interview the child. Are you okay? Is everything all right? Because what they're looking for is a pattern or signs of abuse. And so they get involved in a situation which is an aberration, probably never going to happen again, probably shouldn't have happened in the first place because there's a variety of circumstances that might have led to it other than just negligence of drinking and driving. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, after that, they then do an interview. I participated in some of these interviews, and what I can tell you is it's scarier than heck whenever any parent hears those three words, wants to talk to them. And it's a mandatory interview. You really can't get away from it. I participate in them when necessary because I want to make sure that what happens in the interview, because it's outside of the legal environment, isn't going to be a confession that could be gotten hold of and used mm-hmm. in some way, shape, or form. And really what CPS interview is for is finding out what's going on with this. It's sort of a well check.
You said they're asking about abuse. What kind of abuse? You mean abusing the child, or you're talking about alcohol abuse on the part of the person,
both.
Or both?
Alcohol abuse on the part of the person that may contribute to negligence of raising the child. So, a little careful, not actually getting inebriated and beating your children. Although, I'm sure
But CPS frowns on raising children and being a drunk.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, they frown upon it if it affects the raising of the child.
Right.
So,
I imagine at some point, if it's bad enough, it would.
Sure. You're going to have some effects from, there's books written about children of alcoholics and things of that nature mm-hmm. as well. So really what they're doing is they open a file, and there may never be a file open before, and there may never be an incident throughout the rest of the child's life, but nevertheless, they open up a file and then they do an interview. And they basically try to find out what was going on that day. They also put what they call a safety plan in place where they say, all right, Mr. Smith, you recognize that this is something that shouldn't have happened. Let's put a plan in. What are you going to vow, or what are you going to make sure you do the next time you find yourself in a position where you've had something to drink and you've got to get little Johnny home? And you come up with a plan. Well, I'll call a friend, or I'll take a taxi. Or you basically talk it out in terms of, what will we do if we find ourselves in this situation? CPS's job here, as it's been explained to me from the caseworkers, is they need to make a finding of the allegation of quote-unquote neglect is founded or unfounded. Their decision is completely separate from what the courts may find in any way, shape, or form. They get a copy of the police report quicker than I've been able to get a copy, quicker than Department of Licensing's been able to get a copy, mm-hmm. and that is because the police are required to notify them, and I believe they turn a copy over to them. And so they have a copy of the police report that they've read during this or before this interview as well. So they've got the officer's perspective. They want to hear the parent's perspective. Not too much perspective from the child, although occasionally I've been involved in these where the caseworker talks to little Johnny, and little Johnny, depending on the age, is either unaware of what happened, knows something happened, or if you're up to the age of 15, you get a range of emotions from 15-year-olds.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then usually we wait a little bit, and this is the scary part because people really don't know what's going to happen with the scenario. And
they're thinking, are they going to take my kid from me?
Exactly. That's the first thing anybody says. Yeah. Is this going to cause me to lose custody of my kid? The general answer, the most basic answer I can tell you is if this is the only incident that is created a file or opened a file, the answer is going to be no, if we're talking another scenario that we are. And that's because what CPS is doing is they create a file and they're looking to either find something founded or unfounded. And as you go through life, if there's a variety or a multitude of allegations that are found to be committed or found, at a certain point, you get a breaking point. They don't actually say what that is. But one allegation in this scenario isn't going to be grounds for removal. But if you've got 27 others for unrelated yeah. issues, and then this, even though this might be your first DUI, and this just goes in the file, this may be the straw that breaks the camel's back, so to speak, in terms of, all right, we've had enough founded allegations, we're going to start removal proceedings.
Local DUI attorney Jonathan Rands with us right now in studio this morning here on the Legal Docket on KGMI News Talk 790, talking about, could a DUI cause you to lose custody of your child? And what happens when kids are involved in a DUI scenario, not them themselves, but they're along for the ride, mm-hmm. so to speak. good thing to talk about here, especially at back to school time. Imagine your kid being interviewed at school by CPS. I want to talk more about that when we come back here on the Legal Docket. We do have to run to a quick break. Jonathan Rands, again, our local DUI attorney in studio right now. His website is jrandslaw.com. That's jrandslaw.com. So check it out there. All his contact info there. If you want to give him a call, 360-306-8136 to reach him by phone. And again, all of his other contact info and the way to email him directly is on his website, jrandslaw.com. More in just a moment here on the Legal Docket.
The Legal Docket with Dylan Honku. The Legal Docket with Dylan Honku on KGMI 790 and KGMI.com.
It could be, I think, a parent's worst nightmare, where a DUI, maybe as far as they go, a rather innocent DUI. Innocent, I'm not sure if that's the right word, but not a malicious out-and-out cycle of problems. One mistake that someone made on an evening, could that cause you to lose custody of your child? Well, maybe not, is what we're hearing right now in studio. Local DUI attorney Jonathan Rands talking about the idea of a kid, you possibly your child, or probably, heaven forbid, someone else's child, even worse, in the car with you if you happen to get stopped and arrested for driving under the influence. What does it take? And you mentioned just a little bit about that before we had to go to break about when CPS might get involved if they find out about this and take custody of a child because of a situation like that.
Let's also be clear on one thing that I wasn't super clear on earlier. Mm-hmm. CPS only gets involved when a family member, an immediate family member, is driving the vehicle. Mm. So if you're unrelated by marriage or family and there's a passenger under the age of 16 in the vehicle, CPS is not notified like they are if it's your own child. And that's...
Are there still enhancements as far as sentencing goes?
Absolutely.
And okay.
That's a nice segue for us as well. So just to recap quickly, if it's your son or daughter, stepdaughter, it doesn't go so far as aunt or uncle, but I mean, it's within that range.
Grandkids, no, that's...
Grandparents.
This is an immediate family thing.
Grandparent does qualify, interestingly enough. I've seen it. Now, so the citation has to state that the child was under the age of 16, was in the vehicle. CPS has to be notified when it's an immediate family member through grandparents. But if it's not an immediate family member, you don't notify CPS, okay? So, and that's because, you know, CPS really can't get involved in an issue of neglect that somebody else is responsible for somebody else's child. So just as long as we clear that up. But no matter who you are or what your relationship is, if there's an actual conviction, so the one day in jail stays the same. That's not enhanced, which is actually kind of interesting. I would think that you would enhance somebody as far as punishment goes in a jail, but no, the enhancements come in the form of a fine. Now, this is a little bit unsettled because if there's the mandatory minimum fine is $941. And then there's the legislation says that if a passenger under the age of 16, the minimum fine is $1,000. And the courts are split on this. And the actual, there's an asterisk in the legislative writing here that says you're gonna split on this. Some treat it, the minimum fine is $1,000 rather than $941. But though it's perfectly reasonable to interpret that to be $1,000 on top of the $941 for the enhancement. So you're looking at close to $2,000, double your fine, which makes sense. Although it's an interesting commentary on what the value of a 16-year-old in the car is, or 16 years are on there.
Yeah.
Whatever, there's no additional license suspension. But there is an additional requirement for an ignition interlock device of 6 months. So a DUI conviction is going to get you an ignition interlock requirement for 1 year after any suspension comes and goes. And then beyond that, you're going to need it for an additional 6 months. Here's where it gets really interesting. During the 1 year ignition interlock requirement, any order that is a solid time frame, so the court will say per DOL, you must drive a motor vehicle equipped with an ignition interlock for 12 months. Now, you can sit out that 8 months of that 12 months, but the last 4 months you have to show proof of A, it's installed, and B, that you've blown into it and there's been no positives that aren't excused, meaning that there isn't a malfunction or something like that. So sometimes when you blow into them and you've eaten food or something, you'll get interference. It'll give an error code. You rinse your mouth, you blow into it again, and it starts. So as long as you follow procedure and there's no aberrations that are truly consumption, then that last 4 months, you're done. But you have to show compliance in that last 4 months, meaning that if you do get positive blows that are not excused, the last 4 months starts over again until you get a solid four-month window. So you can actually be stuck in this one-year issue for as long as it takes to get the last 4 months of it clean blows.
Does that happen?
People
get caught in this loop?
Yeah. And you can imagine that if it's always a new 4 months, it just goes on in perpetually, essentially. Mm-hmm. But when that's finally over, then you have to start a new six-month period, and guess what the last 4 months of that period have to be? The same. So there is some room here to essentially never be free of an ignition interlock device, but I would think that you would figure out pretty quick what you need to do in order to make sure that you do get free of this device, because it's $100 a month to maintain those as well. So it's not just a matter of inconvenience. It's $1,200 for the first year. Now, you can sit out the first 8 months. You can just say, I'm not going to drive a car. But if you do that and you think that you can get through the 12 months without showing compliance on the 4 months, you're wrong. You used to be able to do that. But DOL now requires this last 4 months. And if you don't install an ignition interlock and show compliance for the last 4 months, they put a hold on your driver's license for 99 years.
99 years.
Until you show 4 months of compliance with installation and 4 months of compliance. So there's really no way around an ignition interlock in any way, shape, or form, which it makes sense, but it really doesn't make sense for the person who, for instance, suffers the full force of a DUI conviction, moves their life to, say, downtown Seattle, where they can take transit, they can take a cab, they just don't need a car.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll never get a driver's license again until they show compliance. And I've been in situations where clients have said, you know what, my life has changed, I'm professional downtown, I can walk everywhere, I'm not going to buy, I've sold my car, are you telling me I have to buy a car, show installation, and show compliance? And the answer ultimately becomes yes, if you want to get through this. Now, if you truly don't need a driver's license, then who cares about the 99-year hold? But yeah, that's a very rare circumstance.
Oh, it is. I mean, you could live your whole life in downtown Seattle and use transit, but let's say you go to Hawaii for a week. Good luck renting a car.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right.
So there you go. You're already in trouble. So
now, quickly, because I know we're running out of time. So this is, the enhancements really end there. So you get an additional 6 months of ignition interlock, you get an additional fine of $1,000. If this is the second offense and it's not the second time that you've had a child under the age of 16, but a second offense, then the fine goes to $2,000. So, and I think it maxes out at $5,000 it maxes out. I'm just looking at my stats here. It maxes out at $10,000.
Wow. $1,000 each time?
Essentially, more? Yeah. Now, You've got to have something going pretty wrong if you ever get to the $10,000 enhancement.
Yeah.
Either that, or you've got like 20 kids and you just can't get through life.
What if you actually had a kid under 16 in the car for more than one of these arrests?
Because
you're talking about someone who has a DUI history, not necessarily with kids in the car, and then let's say you have two DUIs in your history,
right?
And then your third one is with a child in the car. That jacks that fine up.
Correct.
What if this happens to you more than once?
Well, if it happens to you more than once, then the times that it happens more than once act as priors if they're DUI convictions with children in the car.
Right.
Now, of course, any DUI conviction gets a maximum fine of $5,000. No, whether it's your first or whether it's your fourth. So a court will always have discretion, even if it's knocked down. Let's say that it goes from DUI to reckless driving. A judge still has the authority to say, okay, this was a DUI arrest. It was a child in the car. The minimum fine for DUI would be 941. But you've got some history, and let's say you've got twins in the back seat. I'm going to add $1,000 for each of those kids on top of the 941. So a judge has the discretion to do that kind of stuff. In terms of minimums to maximums, anything within that range is going to be within their discretion to do so. Now, the other thing that we typically see quickly is if there is a child in the car, we usually see additional charges of reckless endangerment, meaning that you get a DUI charge because of the breath level, and then the officer will usually write a citation, and the prosecution will sometimes add it if it hasn't been written by the officer for reckless endangerment, and that is essentially a recognition of a passenger under the age of 16 in the vehicle. And I guess the theory is that they don't really have a choice, and you've engaged in behavior that would cause substantial risk of bodily injury or death to another person, and that's what reckless endangerment is.
How significant of a charge is that, and how is that handled?
I consider it somewhat of a throw-in charge. I think DUI and the penalties that the legislature's come up with stand on their own and cover the scenario. Mm-hmm. Is there a technical basis for it? Yes. Is it one that a jury would find, potentially, depending on the egregiousness of the driving involved and things of that nature? You know, if you just got a taillight out and you get pulled over versus, you know, weaving down the road and barely missing sidewalks and pedestrians and things, well, then you're probably going to see more charges. But sometimes I think that charge is added and then later offered to be dismissed in exchange for a plea to the DUI.
It's a bargaining chip.
It can
potentially.
Be, potentially. Yeah. I think, like anything that has discretion involved, it might be appropriate in one circumstance. It might be not appropriate in another circumstance. And that really comes down to a case-by-case basis.
Well, we are out of time. More questions I'm sure that I could ask, though. And not a good situation to put a kid through either, this CPS interview, if that happens. I can imagine that being pretty scary for a kid. With us right now, local DUI attorney Jonathan Ranz. If you want to reach him, again, 360-306-8136 is his phone number for his local offices. I'll repeat that in just a moment. The website, jranzlaw.com. So check him out online. Not only all of his contact info is there, but blogs and pages with all kinds of background on the things we talk about here on the show and other things we've probably never even gotten to yet here on the show. And the phone number, one more time, 360-306-8136. Jonathan, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me.
The Legal Docket with Dylan Honku. The Legal Docket with Dylan Honku. This is KGMI Bellingham and KGMI.com.